Pompano, a noted marriage counselor, has said that in his opinion, the differences between men and women are one of the greatest causes for distress in any marriage. And yet we find that most couples, a great many of us, have just never given much thought to these differences, and therefore have lived with frustrations. Proverbs 24, verse 3 says, "By wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established." So, as we look at this, let's just ask God to give us wisdom. Why don't we pray just right now? Lord, right now I do pray that you will cause us to be tuned to your voice, that you will give us understanding of each other, that you will give us the love that we know has to come from you in relating to our sweethearts. Lord, we just lift our hearts right now to you and ask that you would speak to each one of us here. In Jesus' name. Amen. Generally speaking, man is objective. To a man, a fact is a fact is a fact is a fact. He takes more of a detached view in this. To a woman, a fact may not be quite a fact. It may be a little bit more than a fact or a little bit less than a fact, depending on how you look at it. Feelings come first with her. And so she has a hard time being detached about anything. Now, the implications of this are far-reaching. Men can see things much more realistically. And he sees the bigger picture, the broader scope of things. He looks to the future. And the wife, the woman, is much more interested in the here and now. A man thinks much more in concept form, and a woman has a hard time seeing the big concept. Now, when we talk about man's objectivity, let's get one thing straight here. A man is very objective with other men, but very unobjective with his wife. You women probably have experienced that already. You've seen men, seen Jack with sessions with the guys, and you know, they're just really going to it and disagreeing about things. And I'm listening in the kitchen as I fix little goodies, and I'm thinking, oh, good night, they're about to come to blows. And then I think, oh, if that were women saying what they're saying to each other, why, those women wouldn't speak to each other for weeks. And yet the next minute, now they'd be slapping each other on the back, you know, and they're buddies. Because they take things objectively. But let a woman say that very same thing to a man, and the objectivity disappears. In other words, wives, you can't expect your husband to be as objective with you and what you say to him as he is with other men. So I'll just throw that in for free here. Because a woman is subjective, she takes things personally 100% of the time. Now, man, can you write that in red across your mind? She takes things personally. There's no way that you're going to call her chubby without her taking that personally. There's no way that you're going to call her your ball and chain without her feeling hurt. Really. And, of course, we hear this often. The classic example of this is if you two have invited another couple over for dinner, And the husband asks you both, where did you get this meat? Your husband may say, at the AMP. You'll say, why? What's wrong with it? A man will say, the Joneses are busy and can't come tomorrow. The wife will say, I wonder what we did to offend them. See what I mean? The thinking? It sometimes borders on the ridiculous how we take things so personally. For instance, the man comes home and he says to his wife, who's all tired out, honey, you have been working so hard all week, cooking and cleaning and taking care of the kids. Tonight I'm going to take you out for a good dinner. Now, some of you men still didn't get that. You see, the wife picked up good dinner. What have I been cooking for you all week? Now, isn't that stupid? And yet, we'll do it. We'll do it almost every time. That we take those things personally. Now, I wish we didn't. And we're going to talk about the other side of that coin. Because we women have got to realize that you men do not mean to a slam. When you say things like that, we're going to have to learn to not take those things personally. But on the other hand, you men have got to learn that we do take things personally, no matter how we determine not to. So a man is objective, and a woman is subjective. A man is essential-minded, and a woman is detail-minded. It really is true in Jack's humorous little thing that he read that where a man has trouble concentrating if a child is banging two pot lids together in the next room, a woman really can stir the soup, listen to somebody on the telephone like this, talk to her child, and listen to another one practice scales on the piano. Most of us really do have that ability. Well, that's beautiful. We need it with children, don't we? And you men don't need it. You can focus on what is essential, on the main subject. And we need this mind for detail in order to do the job that God has given to us. And I think it's just so beautiful the way God has created us in this way. And women who don't have a mind for detail have a harder time being mothers because of this. It's not impossible, but they have a harder time. And yet, a man who is very detail-minded will drive other men up the wall when they are in a business session. Some of you are laughing. You know what I mean. And you have to train yourself not to be quite so detail-minded because a man is thinking in these concepts. And if you want to pick out the little detail, it bothers them. Now, this comes into play in communications. It comes into play on just so many areas that it's a very important one to understand. Because a man doesn't see in detail, a woman gets very hurt sometimes that you don't notice our new hairdo or the new dress that we're wearing. And we get very upset when you go to a conference for a whole week. And you come home and we say, tell us all about it. And you tell us all about it in 10 minutes. Now, you know, you men, you really have told us all about it. I'm beginning to realize this now. Because of your essential-mindedness, you have boiled all the little details down into 10 minutes. And we women have got to realize that you do this, that it isn't the fact that you didn't want to tell us all about that conference. See, this is in our thinking. We think, well, if you don't care enough to tell us all about that conference, then you don't care enough to really communicate with us, therefore you do not love us the way we want you to love us. Isn't that strange how that always goes back to that? But it does. So we women have got to realize that you don't have this mind for detail. And on the other hand, you may want to carry a little notebook around in your pockets and really write down those new engagements and those people that are going to have babies and things like that that we want to know. Ladies, did you ever start to tell your husband something? You know, about that gal down the street, the one whose uncle was running for attorney general, and he divorced his wife, and the child was on dope, and you start going on and on and on. And you look at your husband, and his eyes have kind of crossed. They're glazed over. And you suddenly think, he's not listening to me. And you're right. You've lost him. And you think he's not interested in people, and you think he's not interested in what you're really interested in. And therefore, it detracts from your relationship. And bless your heart, he is a man. And it's very, very hard for him to listen to all those little details. Jack was so proud of me the other day. I was proud of myself when I boiled a whole four-hour long detailed conversation with somebody down into 10 minutes. And I told him all about it in 10 minutes. And he said he was very proud of me. And I'm learning to do this. Now, I said I've got a long way to go. But I'm learning to try to boil it down to the essentials so that he doesn't have to listen to all these little details. Now, on the other hand, it's important maybe for me to have a friend that's a woman so we can talk about all the little details that he isn't that interested in. Lynn and I got so tickled one time when our daughter, who is now 20, we were talking about where you would pin a corsage on a dress that neither one of us had or intended to get. And we spent about 10 minutes discussing this, and all of a sudden I just burst out laughing, and she said, what's the matter? And I says, what would your father think if he was listening to this conversation? And she just goes, oh. But we were very interested in that conversation. And this is probably why we women need a woman friend to go into the details, and you men need men friends to express all the concepts too. Well, this is very vital for a number of reasons. And this is because of our understanding, to really understand this. A man will say, it's a good-looking car, but how does it run? That's the essential, see? A woman will say, oh, but I just don't care for the color. Detail. A man will say, I like that speaker's ideas. And a woman will say, did you notice that his shirt matched his tie? A man will say, that's a well-constructed house. And a woman will say, oh, but the wallpaper in the master bedroom was hideous. Now, do you see how this can beautifully dovetail, if you understand it? I had to laugh at one fellow that was buying a new house, and he asked me to go along and look at it with him. And so we went out and looked at this new house and he was about to buy, and we came home, and our secretary, who was very interested in it too, said, oh, tell me about the house. So I proceeded to tell her about the house, how the blinds matched the wallpaper in this one bedroom, and this was painted with flowers in another bedroom. And the fellow looked at me as though I were describing a totally strange house. And he said, Carol, you're kidding. Were all of those things in that house? I said, yeah. To him, it was a nice house. Let's buy it. A man is more logical, more thing-centered. A woman tends to be more emotional, more people-centered. Now, we'll be talking about this a little bit later, too, but let me say that while this is very, very true, that a man is logical and a woman is emotional, our whole society has polarized this particular thing. to such a degree that some men are completely out of touch with their emotions. They cannot be emotional. And therefore, they have never developed the depth of communication that a woman longs for and that they need. So we'll be talking about this. This is not something that you don't need to really work at. A woman needs to work at understanding a man's logic, and a man needs to work at being able to express his emotions in a way that he rarely does. It's the thing that you hear is men shouldn't cry. Women are, it's a sign of femininity if they cry, kind of a thing. And we've polarized these. Because a man is logical, he's inclined to study the evidence, and in a step-by-step reasoning process, he reaches the conclusion. A woman relies on her intuition, her instinct, and her emotion to reach a conclusion many times. Now, let me show you how this can be used. Someone has suggested that a woman's intuition is really her mind for detail. And I think there's a lot of truth to this. In other words, a woman will go into a given situation and she picks up 20 little details in that situation. She picks up that raised eyebrow, that tone of voice, that manner between a man and a woman, let's say. And all of these 20 little details are filtered into the computer of her mind, and it comes out a feeling, an intuition. And we can't even verbalize why we feel the way we do. But great many times we're right. We really are. Because of this detail-minded. Now, Jack has learned to use this in our marriage. And we'll go into a situation, and many times as we come out of that situation, he'll say, "Now, how did you feel about that situation? How were you intuitively feeling about that situation?" And so I tell him. Now, I appreciate his objectivity on that, in that that doesn't necessarily mean that his mind is colored by my intuition on that. But he is able to go back to that situation, ferret out the facts, and arrive in a conclusion. Isn't that great? So where he sees the bigger picture and he sees things that I don't about that situation, I also see things about that situation that he doesn't see. And we can work together on that. And I appreciate, of course, as a mother, there's absolutely no way that I can be objective about situations with Lynn many times. I'm involved too much with it, right in the middle of it. And so I kind of throw up my hands and think, what do I do? I'm feeling with her too much to make an objective decision on this thing. And while Jack deeply loves Lynn and feels with her too on things, he can be more detached about it and make a good decision on that. Men think in a straight line, usually, right to the topic, and a woman think all around it. What's more, we talk all around it, too. Now, the reason we probably talk all around it is because of this sensitivity that we have, this subjectiveness. We're so afraid we're going to get hurt, or that you might be hurt, that we feel like we've got to kind of creep up to a topic instead of hitting it head on. For instance, just as we're due to leave for a dinner engagement, I might say, "I suppose I really ought to go change." Jack: "Why don't you?" Me: "Don't you like what I've got on?" Jack: "It's okay, but you said you were going to change." Carol: "I was just saying that to see if it was okay not to." Now, things like that have really happened in our family. Now, why didn't I just say, "Do you like what I have on? Is it okay to leave this on as we go out to dinner?" Because of my subjectivity. I was a little bit afraid that he might tell me too bluntly if he didn't like what I had on. So I creep up to it. Now, like I said, men, I'm sorry we're this way, but we are. Because of this, we need constant reassurance of your love. You men, we need to be told, we need to be reassured, because we're so insecure in this area, most of us. A man identifies with his life work, and a woman identifies with her home. Now, this can get you into a lot of trouble if you don't understand it. A man thinks of his work as being an extension of his personality. A woman thinks of her home as being an extension of her personality, many times. Therefore, gentlemen, when you neglect something around the home that your wife has asked you to do 20 times, see, you think of that as being 20 down on your priority list, and in your mind it is. But because she identifies with her home as an extension of her personality, she takes that as a personal rejection. It's very hard for her not to. Now, the other side of that coin is, you wives, when you neglect something that your husband has asked you to do, connected with his business, or his job, or his ministry, and you neglect it, you know, that letter that he wants you to write, that group that he wants you to have over for dinner, all of these kind of things, and you neglect it because it's 20th down on your priority list, he takes it as a personal rejection. So therefore, in your priority list, you wives, you need to put some of those things that he asks you to do right up to the top, after God, with your husband. However, just in understanding this, when your husband neglects some of those things around the house, and you can say to yourself, you wives, now he isn't really neglecting me. I've got to remember that. He doesn't think about this the way I do. It will help when he does this. Finally, and oh, by the way, let me say this. We hope, Zach and I, that this whole weekend will just be a beginning for you to start to really do some research and some study. We're only hitting some of the high spots on this. It isn't meant to be comprehensive. And so I've just taken five of the differences. There are many more than that. It will help you to do some research and some study on this kind of thing. But finally, a man uses speech to convey facts and ideas. A woman uses speech to express feelings and emotions. Now, this is absolutely vitally important to understand. Let's say Jack and I are looking at a moon. And I say, isn't that a beautiful moon? Now, what am I really saying? You men that have been married longer than a year, you should know what I'm saying. What I'm really saying is, oh, that makes me feel romantic. I'm expressing a feeling from what I just said. Now, if Jack comes back with, yeah, that's bright enough to shoot a golf ball by, I get upset. He may be expressing a fact back, but he did not catch my feeling. He did really do that in jest one time, but it was in jest, and we both laughed about it. We're at breakfast, and it's raining outside. So I look outside, and I say, oh, it's raining outside. Now, I could be expressing a number of things by saying that. I could be saying, oh, that makes me feel so depressed. Or I could be saying, oh, that makes me feel energetic. I'm going to clean house today. But chances are I am expressing a feeling.
Jackson looks outside. He says, it's raining outside.
He means that the clouds have parted and little drops of moisture are falling to the ground.
He is expressing a fact. I am expressing a feeling. And unless we understand that, we're in trouble.
Now let me show you how this can relate to just everyday incidences of marriage. I backed the car out a while ago. And I backed a little too soon, and I took part of the garage with the fender. And I came in, and I said, oh, honey, I feel just terrible. You just can't imagine how it made me feel inside when the car went crunch. And and he stopped me, and he said, never mind all that. Just tell me what happened. If that had happened 10 years ago, I would have burst into tears. Really. Because I would have felt, Jack is not understanding me. But because that happened just 2 or 3 years ago, I grinned. And I thought, oh yeah, he's interested in the facts. And so I told him what had happened. And you know, he didn't beat me or anything. If I have to convey to Jean down here that I like what she's got on, I have to convey from one woman to another a feeling. If Jean says, how do you like my jacket? And I say to Jean, I like it. Jean's going to think she hates it. And chances are she'd be right. So I, in order to convey to Jean that I really like her jacket, see, I've got to say, oh, Jean, that is a stunning jacket. The color is beautiful, and I really like the style. And then maybe I'll convince Jean that I really like her jacket. Now, do you men wonder why, when your wife asks you, how do you like my suit? And you say, I like it. They're interpreting from a woman's point of view. That actually happened. One couple overseas was married less than a year, and the dear gal had bought a new dress, and she brought it home. She says, how do you like my new dress? And he said, I like it. So she took it back. And so she brought another one, and she came home, and she says, well, how do you like this dress? And he said, well, I like it, but I like the first one better. Why did you take it back? She started crying. See, she hadn't yet understood that a man speaks to convey facts. A woman speaks to convey feelings. So, gals, the other side of that coin is when he says, I like it, believe him. Truly. Just after I had begun to study some of these differences, Jack had been away for a couple of weeks, and I had knocked myself out fixing up the guest room, painted it, gotten S&H green stamp bedspreads, you know, just really worked at it. And so, of course, the minute he walked in the door, I, as I'm inclined to be a little bit dramatic anyway, I rushed him up the stairs and I flung open the guest room door and I said, how do you like it? And he said, I like it. And I started to think, oh, he doesn't like it. And then I remembered, oh yes. And so I started laughing. And he said, what are you laughing about? So we got this all squared away. And he said, well, I really do like it. And I said, yes, I realize that now, that you really do like it. The fellows, we wives have the habit, I'm afraid, of projecting what you're going to say, the responses that you should have in the light of how we're feeling. This is wrong. But so often I've caught myself
thinking, now when Jack comes in that door, this is what I'm going to say, and then he's going to say that, and then I'm going to say this. He's going to say that. And then he comes in and I say that, and he doesn't say the first thing I've got planned for him. And that used to frustrate me a great deal. But now I realize that this is part of the difference between men and women. And if I ask God for understanding, then God's going to give it to me. And a lot of these situations are going to be humorous rather than a big deal and a cause for a problem and a conflict and frustration. Just last week, Jack and I got so tickled at we were presenting this. Like I said, we're still learning. And Jack, he kissed me just as we were ready to go out. And he said, what kind of perfume are you wearing? And I said, Taboo. And he said, oh, it smells different. And I said, well, I'm sorry you don't like it. And he said, I didn't say I didn't like it. And I says, well, you didn't say you did like it. And he said, I like it. Terrible. Well, because of some of these differences, it has been suggested that a man's main weakness is his sense of discouragement. This is his psychological pitfall. The doer, the fighter, the conqueror, he needs a continuing vote of confidence to be esteemed and admired, to have his ego built up. A man can never succeed enough. He will never be satisfied. A wife can either push or inspire, make or break him. But if he's a success in her eyes, he never really fails. He needs her behind him at all times. New wives need to remember this, that a man's greatest weakness is his sense of discouragement. A woman's main weakness is her sense of loneliness. This is her psychological pitfall. She's more loving, more emotional, more dependent. She is more sensitive to human loneliness. She experiences a greater need for interpersonal relationships and for heart-to-heart communications. And we're going to go into that in another session. Just one kind of funny thing before I'm finished is sometimes just in the physical differences rather than the obvious, they can cause irritations. A man, for instance, is built like this. They find this in skeletons. They can how to tell a skeleton from a man from a woman's skeleton. Well, a man is built like this. And a woman is built like this. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, wait a minute. Try again. Woman is built like this. In other words, a man has broad shoulders and goes down to smaller hips. Woman has smaller shoulders, goes down to broader hips so she can bear children. So we find that man's center of gravity is in his chest area. And a woman's center of gravity is in her hip area. And it's why women can sit comfortably longer than men can. Truly. Now, did you ever get irritated with your husband because he couldn't sit still? Get up, start to pace. And or he starts to wiggle when you got a long story. Well, bless your heart. You understand the God-given differences. You wouldn't get irritated about that. On the other hand, you girls will be happy to know this. The fat distribution is different in our bodies.
That's why females have more curves. But it's also, she has the fat over the tissues throughout her body. She's warmer because of this. She burns up energy more economically than men. She can live longer in cold to protect her children. But it's also why we lose weight harder. So it really does take us longer to lose weight. Please be patient with us. Okay, done that. Well, let's go back to Ephesians 4:32. Put this into your marriage. Hang on to it. Be kind to one another. Be understanding. Be as ready to forgive others as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you.
Is she great?
Amen.
She's sure fun to live with, I'll tell you. Want to stand up a minute? Yeah, why don't you? You guys are getting tired of sitting by now. Let me just reemphasize what Carol's already said from a man's standpoint on these differences and the importance of understanding them and making adjustments where we need to. And as Carol has brought out, there are some adjustments that you wives need to make in realizing the differences, and then there's some adjustments that we husbands need to make. I, for instance, have worked on this business of trying to respond enthusiastically to something that Carol wants that kind of a response to. Now, I'm not always successful at it, but I'm working at it. But so often, these things can be a problem. Not only because we don't understand them, but also because we don't recognize them as an asset rather than a liability. The differences between a man and a woman. One time we had a young couple that came through town, stayed overnight with us. They had been married, probably less than a year. And we'd had breakfast together, and the gals had gone off shopping, and he and I were sitting there having a third cup of coffee and still chatting. And finally he says, "You know, Jack," he says, "let me ask you about something." I said, "Sure, fire away." And so he said, "I've noticed that your wife and my wife are quite a bit alike in temperament and personality, and that you and I are quite a bit alike in temperament and personality." I said, "Well, what do you mean? Tell me about that." And so he said, "Well, Carol and my wife are rather vivacious, outgoing, energetic, extrovertish, talkative, and bubbling." He says, "And you and I are a little more conservative, we're quiet, don't have a whole lot to say in most social situations." And I said, "Well, yeah, that's probably a pretty good description." He says, "Now, how do you handle that problem?" I said, "What problem?" And his problem was that he looked upon that as a problem. He didn't know how to cope with it. He was a little bit intimidated by her in certain situations, threatened by her because she overpowered him, so he thought. And so we talked about that for some length, about the advantages that is and the asset that is to him, that his wife has that kind of a personality and temperament, whereas his is somewhat the opposite. For instance, I gave him I picked an illustration out. I hate small talk. That's probably an overstatement of the case, but it isn't my most enjoyable thing just to sit around and yakking about the weather and, you know, last week's news and so forth. But Carol is really good at that. Now, it isn't that she necessarily enjoys it, but she does. As you heard, she and Lynn talking about a bouquet or a corsage that they were going to wear on a dress, which neither of them intended to buy or ever have. And that went on for 10 minutes. Well, that to me is small talk, and it drives me absolutely up the wall. If I am forced into a situation where I have to participate, but with her along, in a given social situation, she knows how I respond to that, and man, she will pick up the ball so beautifully. And I can sit there and be 1,000 miles away, look with an intelligent look on my face. And the people will never know. Now, I consider that to be an asset, not a liability. And there are many other situations where our personality differences can make up for one another. And we can capitalize on it as an asset. So it's important not only to understand these differences, but to look on them as something that God has given us to make our relationship with each other that much more meaningful, and to give us the outreach and expand our horizons and give us greater opportunities. So let's learn these things. And as Carol mentioned, this is just the beginning. If some of these things that she has talked about you've never realized before, we would encourage you to do some more reading and research on it and discuss it together for sure. Now, I want to switch gears now and for the next half hour and begin talking about the role of the husband. There are basically two that we're going to be discussing over the weekend. I'm not sure when we'll get to the second one. They're both mentioned in Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5, verses 22 to 24, talk about the role of the husband and his position as leader in the home, or his headship, as it talks about here. Verse 23, "For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church." And then verses 25 to 29 talk about the husband's role, or the husband's passion, as I call it, or his love, his responsibility as lover. And in verse 25, it's, "Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church." Now, man, I don't know whether you have stopped to seriously consider those two statements, but the comparison of our being the head of our wife and our being the lover of our wife, as Christ is the head of the church and as Christ loves his church, the implications of that are absolutely staggering. There is no other comparison of a human relationship in all of the scriptures that is made like this, that another person is to have the kind of a relationship to another person as Christ has to the church, except in the husband and the wife. It's the only place it's given. Now, Christians are exhorted to love one another, but this brings it down to a specific. And to begin with here, instead of taking the headship first, we're going to take the husband as loving his wife as Christ loved the church first. And so I'd like to get into some of the practical aspects of this without going into any deep theological truths. Now, we're going to talk both about, we're going to be talking probably in the morning about the physical relationship, and Carol will be talking about it from a woman's standpoint, and I will be talking about it from the husband's standpoint. But right now, I'd like to approach the subject of the husband being the lover of his wife, as Christ is the lover of his church, from some practical standpoints, purely apart from the physical. Someone has said that love is essential to both husband and wife. To be admired is essential to both husband and wife. But to be loved is more important to the wife, and to be admired is more important to the husband. Someone has said that love is essential to both husband and wife. To be admired is essential to both husband and wife. But to be loved is more important to the wife, and to be admired is more important to the husband. It's the reason, guys, why, or one of the reasons, why, as Carol mentioned, they've got to hear it. I love you. those three little words that leave them dancing on air and gasping for breath. Now, but it takes more than that. In 1 John 3:18, it says, "My little children, let us not love in word and in speech, but in deed and in truth." In other words, it's not enough just to say it. It needs to be said, but it's not enough just to say it. And what John is telling the people here is that our love has to have shoe leather to it. It's got to be involved with action, in deed and in truth. And it's an interesting thing to me to note that all through the Scriptures, whenever God's love is expressed toward man, it always is in terms of action. You never find God just saying, "I love you." It's always His love expressed in terms of what He has done for us. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. "But God commendeth His love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." Now, if our love to our wives is to exemplify Christ's love to His church, then it's got to have shoe leather to it. It's got to be put into action. Right? So, let me suggest three things that you try to do every day. These are three things that I aim to do every day as a husband that will put shoe leather to your love. First of all, I aim to tell her. I think that goes without saying. Every day, without fail, I try to tell Carol at least once, verbally, that I love her. Now, it doesn't have to be a great big romantic setting. You know, you don't have to have something you're building up to all day long, and then at the right appropriate moment, you take her into your arms, you know. Doesn't have to be that way. Just walk up behind her and whisper in her ear, "Honey, I love you." But man, she's got to hear. Don't be like the guy I heard about who got sick and tired of hearing his wife nag to him about telling her that he loved her. And finally he got a plaque made, a great big one. "I love you," written across it, and he hung it above the kitchen sink. And he says, "There." Well, that doesn't quite do it. So every day, tell her you love her. Now, you know, it would be interesting, guys, to take a little poll right now. Not from you, but from your wives. On this one. How faithful are you on this? She needs that reassurance. This is her feminine heart response. It isn't that she doubts your love. It's this, that she wants to hear you say it. "I love you." It takes so little effort. And yet it means so much. So aim to do that every day. Secondly, aim to do something nice for her. Now this gets a little harder. This takes a little creativity, a little imagination, a little thought, a little planning sometimes. To do something nice for her every day. You remember Carol mentioned that the home is the extension of the wife's personality, and therefore when we neglect those little things that she has asked us to do around the home, it becomes a problem. Well, it can be something like that, to change the bulb and the lamp in the living room. I mean, bless their hearts, some of these wives, they just don't have a knack for unscrewing. They don't know which way to go with that bulb. And you know, they try and screw it this way to get it out, and it doesn't come. And so, "Honey, can you change that bulb in the light fixture?" Or maybe it's more complicated, you know, fix the switch on the lamp. Now, that gets into a little more electrical engineering problem, and so you need to know a little bit more about it. And I realize that some of us guys are not very adept at that type of thing. But take the responsibility then for getting it done if you can't do it yourself. Doing something nice for her. Stop and think right now. What is something nice you could do for your wife today? You haven't done anything nice for her yet today. Why? What could you do before the day's over? Well, you could take her for a walk this afternoon and pick some wildflowers just for her. You know, it's so inexpensive. And yet, you gals, wouldn't you love that? Huh? You bet. To get into the habit, guys, and that's what it is. It's a habit. You remember I mentioned, and Carol also has mentioned, and we're going to repeat it again and again, and probably again before the weekend is over, that it needs to be worked at, this matter of marriage. Well, this is part of it, of being creative and thoughtful and thinking of ways to please her by doing some nice things for her. Someday bring her home from work, one red rose. Not a bunch of them, just one. A little more romantic. And it's cheaper. But she won't think about the money. She'll just think about the one red rose and how thoughtful you were. Or take her on a picnic and pick her some wildflowers and put it in the middle of the picnic table. You're on a trip. Send her a telegram. Three words. I love you. Leave it unsigned. Man, you will really have a story to listen to when you get home. Thirdly, pay her a compliment. Pay her a compliment. Sometime during the day, express a word of appreciation or a complimentary statement about her for something she's done, the way she looks, something. Now, of course, there are certain kinds of situations that come up regularly that provide just a beautiful opportunity, like a new dress. A lot of guys have gotten into the habit, after a little while of marriage, that they take this for granted. I would suggest that we get into the habit, if we're not already, of if you like it, guys, say so. Don't be like this guy I heard about out in Vermont. This is a story that appeared in the Chicago Tribune. And the writer points out that family life holds together on the thin thread of praise and commendation. And it really does. We all like to be appreciated and know that we are making a contribution and that we are loved. Unhappily, we have a way of withholding expressions of appreciation and gratitude from those the nearest to us. It gets to be routine, and so, you know, well, another day, another week goes by, and, you know, it's the same old thing again. In Vermont, so the story goes, a tight-lipped husband finally said to his wife, "When I think of how much you have meant to me all these years, it is almost more than I can do sometimes to keep from telling you so." Well, I'm sure there's no one in the room like that, but it can get to that place from time to time. If you like it, say so. She's been to the beauty parlor. She gets her hair done. You come home from work and you notice, but you don't say anything. Man, you've passed up a beautiful opportunity to pay her a compliment. She's done an outstanding job in cleaning the house. She's really worked at it. And the house just looks great. And you don't say anything. Brother, you ought to be kicked up around the block all the way. A dinner. How many meals has that gal sitting next to you gotten up for you? And you've never said thank you or paid her a compliment on it. Now, I don't know whether you guys have read this book, Letters to Philip, by Charlie Shedd, or or the subtitle is How to Treat a Woman. But if you haven't read this, you ought to get a hold of a copy. I don't know whether they got it over at the book table or not, but they do have. Good. Well, you ought to buy a copy. You ought to read it through once a year, because you could never begin to put it all into practice in one year. Now, my wife tells you gals not to read this, because he builds such a beautiful case that if your husband didn't do all these things, then you could begin to compare him with the ideal man in this book, and he'll never live up to it. So don't read it, girls. But he's got one little section in here on paying your wife a compliment and how you can do this. Now, there are a number of suggestions that he gives, like you're not a woman, you're a memorable occasion. There are several places I could think of you could use that very effectively. Or, baby, your blueberry pie is all by itself. But now, girls, when he says that, the way you have to take it is that there is no other blueberry pie in the world that is as good as yours. There's another way you could take that, but don't. Carol and I have several little family jokes, and one of the things that I kid her about from time to time is the cherry pie that she made me one time when we were living down in Dallas, Texas. And she'd gotten this new recipe, and it called for a tablespoon or a teaspoon of lemon juice. Well, she got right up to the point of needing the lemon juice when she was mixing the thing up, and she realized she didn't have any lemon juice, so she used lemon extract. I don't think she used a whole teaspoon, but she did use lemon extract, and we sat down at dinner, and man, it was a beautiful pie. You know, it was the kind that had the crisscross top on it, and it was just gorgeous. And after dinner, we sat down, and both of us had a big piece in front of us, and I took the first bite. It looked like cherry, but it tasted like lemon. So in that case, you say, baby, your cherry pie is all by itself. Now, Charlie Shedd talks about this matter of paying your wife a compliment regarding meals, and he's humorous about it, and yet, guys, he's got a very good point. And I have tried to develop the habit of complimenting Carol on a meal. On every meal, because she is a fantastic cook, and I enjoy sitting down there and eating all that stuff. But he says, do you realize, my dear boy, what a tremendous undertaking it is to serve a good meal, planning, buying, preparing, cooking, setting the table, dishing up, and then the whole messy business in reverse when it's over? In fact, one good meal is such an accomplishment that for you to sit there, devour it, and then hurry back to your TV game without saying a good word must be a mortal sin. Of course, I'm not God, and I don't know the answer to the old argument about whether there are major and minor evils, but I've had to get up a few meals from beginning to end. And if there is a difference, then neglecting to compliment the wife on a good dinner must be a very major error. There are some instances in which you'd be a fool to pass up 100% opportunity on your investment. This is one of them, and just 7 words will do it. That was a great meal. Thank you. Now, guys, when was the last time you did that? Pay her a compliment. Every day, aim at paying her a compliment. And all of these things, telling her that you love her, doing something nice for her, paying her a compliment, are ways of expressing our love to her, which she understands and knows and appreciates. And this, in my opinion, is the practical aspect of husbands loving your wives as Christ also loved the church. Putting shoe leather to it. Of course, if you want to really make points sometime, take her in your arms. Walk up behind her when in a very unromantic situation, like when she's cooking dinner or doing the dishes. Put your arms on her waist. Slowly turn her around, look into her eyes for just a second or two, and then lay one on her. I mean, really, really kiss her, you know, a real backbender. And then just walk away and don't say a word. Man. That'll set up the whole evening for you. Now, guys, let me ask you a question. We're talking about husbands loving their wives. We're talking about keeping sparkle and enthusiasm and excitement in your marriage relationship, and that is our responsibility. Are you fun to live with? Have you worked over the years? Now, I realize some of you have been married quite a while and some of you haven't, but have you worked at this matter of keeping that edge of excitement, that edge of the unexpected, the surprise, the enthusiasm in your marriage relationship? Have you developed what some people have called the habit of happiness? When Lynn was in high school, she took a course on marriage, and in the textbook there was a statement that I copied out purely from a secular standpoint. But here's what it said. One of the most important characteristics of a marriageable person is the habit of happiness. It would be impossible to overestimate the value of cultivating this trait in oneself and of seeking it in a marriage partner. Now notice it says cultivate it in yourself. Now there's some of us guys who are of a temperament type that we are more quiet, we're more reserved, we're more conservative. We come through a little bit more sophisticated, if that's the right word. And we have to work harder at this than some guys who are of the temperament type. You know, they're always dreaming up something exciting. In fact, they wear their wives out. But Proverbs puts it this way, a cheerful heart is a good medicine, but a downcast spirit dries up the bones. Cheerful heart is a good medicine. And guys, we need to work at this. Of keeping the atmosphere in our home happy, cheerful, exciting, fun. You come home from work. How do you walk in the door? Well, you work in an office. You wear a tie. So you walk in the door, the collar's loosened, the tie's down, the shoulders are slumped, there's a bead of perspiration rolling off the bottom of your chin. You got a frown on your face, and the first words out of your mouth is, "Man, I had a tough day at the office." What an exciting way to begin the evening. Really sets the tone, doesn't it? One guy was telling me that when he drives home from work, there is a certain telephone post along the way. That when he gets to that telephone post, he takes all the problems of the day, all of his concerns, all of his worries, all the gripes that he's had at work for the day, and he hangs them there on that telephone pole, and he heads on home. And from that point on, he leaves them back there on the telephone post. And so when he walks in the door, he's fresh. He greets his wife with a happy smile. And it starts the evening off and the supper and the dinner hour with a whole different atmosphere than if he walked in ready to bite somebody if they looked cross-eyed at him. Now, as I said, this is something we need to work at. We are not always successful. I am not always successful. On the other hand, you gals play a part in this. When your husband walks in the door from work, what kind of a greeting does he get? What kind of encouragement does he get to really create an atmosphere of happiness and fun and excitement? Does he get any encouragement? Or is it the situation reversed? You know, you begin to pour out your tale of woe and you've got the perspiration dripping off of your cheek and you got that old frowsy dress on. Well, you know, that isn't a great deal of encouragement either. You know, I cannot think of one time in the last several years when Carol has been home and I've gotten home from work or from a trip or been gone all day, when she heard me come in, that she did not drop what she was doing and come to the door and greet me with a kiss. Now, brother, that really helps. And you gals maybe need to give some thought to that. What kind of a greeting does your husband get when he comes home? But it is our responsibility, men, to keep the sparkle and the life in our home exciting. The first question I ask you, are you fun to live with? And let me ask you another one. Does it excite you to make her happy? Do you kind of get that feeling of joy and bubble down inside your heart when you know that you are going to do some little thing that's really going to make her respond enthusiastically and with that glee and happiness and sparkle that she can get in her eye from time to time? Now, I'm talking about things that are totally apart from sex. We'll get to that tomorrow. Does it excite you to make her little things that you do to work at? Like I mentioned, a flower, a small gift, a little bottle of perfume. What does she really enjoy doing that you can take it or leave it? Maybe you don't even like to do it. For instance, I hate to window shop. When I buy something, I am very objective. You know, differences between men and women. If you ever noticed that just in buying something, what does a woman do? Well, she decides generally what she wants. And then she goes to every store in town that generally handles that particular thing. She compares the quality. She compares the price. And finally, makes a decision. That process could take anywhere from 2 hours to several weeks. The way I buy something is I read Consumer's Report. I research it a little bit. I find out exactly what I want. Before I even leave the front door, I know pretty much the price range. I go down to the store, I walk up to the counter, and I say, I want that. I pay the people, and I go home with it. That takes anywhere from, 15 to 20 minutes, depending on how far away the store is. So I'm not a particular lover of window shopping, but I know Carol loves to do it. She likes to go just look in the windows and walk through this store and that store. And so from time to time, I'll take off from work early in the afternoon, give her a call and say, what you doing? Nothing. Well, let's go down to the Citadel, or let's go over to so-and-so and take a look around. On the spur of the moment, spontaneously. Now, this is what I mean. It's a type of thing I mean by keeping sparkle in it. Surprising her, keeping her just a little bit off guard at times. And guys, they love it. Call her and take her to lunch if it's possible. Your job may not allow that. But give her a call about 10:30 in the morning. Say, honey, could you get away? Now, I realize with small kids there may be situations and so on. But if you can, man, it's something that'll really put excitement. Call her on the phone from work. Say, honey, I just wanted to call you and tell you how much I love you and just to chat with you for a few minutes. And then talk for about 5 minutes and that's it. Now, when you do that, guys, be sure your heart is pure and don't ask her what's in the mail or something like that. You know, you blow the whole thing. Charlie Shedd in his book calls this fragments of devotion. fragments of devotion. And this is something we have to work at. Now, guys, we do this with our job. I do this in my ministry and in my job. I try to come up with new ideas, new thoughts, new ways to do things. I try to be creative and thoughtful. Now, if we do this with our job, why should not we do it with our marriage? And yet I am convinced, and Carol and I have talked about this, and as we've talked to couples, we've come to the conclusion that this is one of the very real reasons why so many marriages are going on the rocks, is because couples have just not worked at their marriage relationship, and especially the husband, in this area of demonstrating his love to his wife, of continuing to woo her and win her after the initial winning has taken place. I think this is the right item. In Charlie Shedd's book again, he says, we've said before that you'd better spend some time trying to think like a woman thinks. He says, if you do, you will discover why all these things, these little things that I've been talking about, mean so much to her. One of the strangest bits of feminine logic going on in a woman's head is something I find hard to explain. The best way I can put it is this, that although she wants you to feel secure with her, and she wants to feel secure with you, she still hopes that you will keep on pursuing her even after you have won her. And if we could look into your wife's heart right now, she would be shaking her heart's head up and down like this, in agreement with that statement. See, the male intellect differs here in that we are likely to reason, well, now that's done, what's next? The female, on the other hand, doesn't think that way. With her, this is more like our family story about Bach, you remember? And he tells this story. This young pianist had completed her first year at the conservatory when her old professor at home asked her what she had accomplished that semester. She answered, "Thank goodness we finished Bach." Whereupon the aged sage replied, "My dear, nobody ever finishes Bach. You may turn Bach off, but you never finish him." This is how love is to a woman. You never finish. The man may think when he says, "I do," that he has accomplished his mission. His wife, being much wiser about these things, senses that true love has no maximum. For those who keep opening new roads into each other's hearts each day, and very often new possibilities are forever opening up, and the greatest love goes on to new greatness. I suppose that's why I've never heard one woman complain about her husband being too considerate. Yeah. Does it make you happy to excite her? Fragments of devotion. Let me ask you guys to jot down a question and then talk to your wives about it later. Here's the question. By my actions, how would my wife list these items of priority in my life? By my actions, how would my wife list these items of priority in my life? And then I've got five items, and I have not listed these in order of priority. But it's one thing I'd like to have you do some talking about this afternoon. Now, see, you may think you've got this all straightened out, but talk to your wife about it. How does she see it from her vantage point? And it may be that you need to adjust some priorities in your life. Number one, the ministry in which I'm involved. Number two, my relationship to God. Number three, my job. Number four, my wife. Number five, my children. And I'd like to have you talk about that. And with that, we're going to quit, and then we'll pick it up this afternoon on the topic of, does your wife know that she is number one in your thoughts next to God? Have you communicated that to her? Does she know that for a fact? Okay, let's break for lunch.